Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Yeah, I watch Formula One. I love Formula One. I watch every race. I was lucky to be there in part of that world. I still work for the French TV Canal Plus.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The Formula One Pod on Off the Ball. Brought to you by KitKat. Hit pause, have a break, have a KitKat.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the F1 Pod. And as always, the F1 Pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by KitKat, bringing breaks to the fastest sport in the world. Hashtag have a break. We're delighted to be back in studio. And as always, Ciara is beside me. Ciara, how are you and did you enjoy the race?
I thoroughly enjoyed the race. There was lots of shouting at the TV, so I think that's always a good sign.
And we are delighted as well to be joined by Rebecca Clancy on the line. Rebecca, how are you and did you enjoy the race?
Yes, very much enjoyed the race. Thanks for having me back on.
No problem. It seems like this race, at least for me, was what we've been sort of promised all along with these regulations. Bit of instability, bit of unreliability, some exciting podiums and a lot of overtaking. I want to start, I suppose, as we seem to always be doing now, with Mercedes, with Kimi Antonelli, with George Russell. This is turning into a proper battle and it seems like Antonelli is the one who's really, really taking it by the reins.
Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant yo-yo racing, as it's now being called. I'm a big fan of these regulations. Just as soon as we all stop talking about megajoules and all of that side of it, I think if you just, you know, watch it with just as it is, take it as it in its kind of racing. It's been really fun. I think everyone lost count of how many times the lead swapped. We are seeing proper racing between these two Mercedes drivers. I think there's going to be quite a few conversations between now and Monaco about how they go racing. You know, it's absolutely the drivers do not need to be told to not crash into each other, but a little reminder doesn't do any harm, as I think might be the case here. But yeah, Antonelli has won 4 races in a row. We've only had 5 races. Quite a healthy lead now, 43 points over George Russell. He is definitely in command of this championship, but still a very, very long way to go. 17 races. It's a long old season, even with those 2 cancellations that we've had. But it's been brilliant. You know, it was real wheel-to-wheel stuff. I think we're starting to see a bit of tension between these two. Very much coming into the year, it was George Russell who was the favourite, but it's Antonelli who's gone on to win the 4 races. George obviously won the season opener in Australia, but he's the one fighting back.
And it was George who said after he got over throwing his toys out the pram, quite literally, that it was Kimi's championship to lose now. Do you think that's true? And what's going to happen between these two drivers, do you think, now that things are really hotting up between them?
Oh, it's a lovely bit of mind games, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's his to lose. You know, pile as much pressure on as you possibly can. Don't look over here. It's all his now. You know, he can only do wrong. It's not up to me. I mean, poor George, if he didn't have bad luck, he wouldn't have any luck, would he? I really feel for him. It's all kind of gone against him. But as we know in sport, you have to be in the right place to take advantage of the luck when it comes your way. And Antonelli has done that brilliantly. He has been fantastic. For Russell now, he just needs to keep his head down. As I said, 17 races to go. It is an extremely long season. I mean, only last year we saw Piastri leading the championship. He had a 44-point lead over his teammate at one point. He had a 104-point lead over Max Verstappen at one point, and Verstappen finished ahead of him in the championship. So anything is possible. Last year, Antonelli in the European season, which we're now going into, of the 9 races, Antonelli only scored 3 points. So there's still a long way to go. You can have dips in your season. He's only 19 years old. You know, we're still expecting quite a lot from him. He's breaking loads of records. Youngest driver to ever lead the championship. First driver to ever win their first 4 races consecutively. But there's still so much there. And, you know, the mind games are happening now. We saw it, didn't we? A lot of people talking about 2016. 10 years ago this month, we had Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton crashing into each other. That season became completely toxic within Mercedes. That it actually nearly pulled the team apart. Are we seeing this again? I mean, Toto Wolff, he was in charge then. He's still in charge now. He's absolutely does not want that headache again. He may have it anyway. It might not be optional. I think we are starting to see tension between those two drivers. I think that's very natural, to be honest. I think That's what happens. They're not really teammates. That is a massive oxymoron. So yeah, we'll just kind of have to see how it goes. But for Russell, he just needs to keep his head down.
Do you think that we're kind of compared to 10 years ago, is the psychology of trying to win the Drivers' Championship so different because of how long the seasons are now? I mean, if you look back, I was going to say 20 years ago, but even just the 10, how much fewer races you had, you weren't traveling around the world perhaps as much. Like, even though we've kind of seen the Mercedes in this championship battle before, it's an entirely different playing field now.
Yeah, I mean, back then, what was it, 18 or so races? And now we were supposed to have 24, we're down to 22. But the mind games are as much a part of a championship fight as anything. You know, 10 years ago, I remember all the stories coming out about what Rosberg and Hamilton were doing to each other. So Rosberg would turn up late to the debriefs just to wind Hamilton up. And it was as simple as that. And, you know, we saw him retire just a few days after winning the championship because mentally he just couldn't go on anymore, because that entire year, it wasn't just the physical side of it. He had had to pull on every single bit of resources that he had mentally and physically. And he was done by the end of the year. And now, like you say, it's even longer. It's harder to stay fitter. And on top of not just the extended calendar, obviously the sport has grown exponentially. So we have all these new partners coming in and sponsors. There's so much more expected from the drivers off track. They need to be at all of these events. You know, just before Montreal, the Mercedes drivers were in LA doing something with Brad Pitt. You know, when do they fit in their training? When do they get their body clocks in the right place? And that is also a huge part of what their performance coaches, so their trainers, what they will be working with the drivers. And that is such an important part that cannot be understated.
And this is just to go, this is all hypothetical, of course, but going back into that psychology, this has been such a stop-start season. I feel like there's been no fluidity at all so far. Do you think, like, when we came back from the 5-week break, Fred Vasser said this is a whole new championship, we're restarting. Do you think that could be playing in Kimi's favour at all, having these, you know, this is still fresh for him. Do you think, and this again, so hypothetical, that could be playing into Mercedes' hands, having this new start every time?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's so bizarre. We're at the end of May now and we've only had 5 races. We had that 5-week break and then we had Miami and then we had a 2-week break and then we've had Montreal and now we've got another 2 weeks and then we go to Monaco. It has been incredibly stop-start. I don't think it particularly plays into anyone's hands because they're all in the same boat. They all have the same challenge. It was actually really interesting hearing Lewis Hamilton speaking in Montreal because he was saying he hasn't done any sim time. Whereas I spoke to George Russell earlier in the week and he was saying he's done loads of sim time because that's how he's been trying to keep himself sharp. So I think for the drivers, they just need to work out what is best for them. But you're right. There's been no momentum. It's been really, I mean, even as sort of watching it and trying to get into the season, it's been quite tricky. But we're quite lucky in that there's a sort of overarching narrative. We have the new regs. We have the Mercedes battle. We obviously have had all the upgrades that came to Miami and then to Montreal. And so there's kind of been a thread to keep it all going, but it has absolutely been a challenging start for the drivers.
And you mentioned Lewis Hamilton there, whose kind of challenging start he seemed to overcome this weekend. It's his highest finish yet with Ferrari. He seems to be kind of enjoying the new cars. He certainly enjoyed, Montreal. This is a happy Lewis Hamilton that we're seeing in Ferrari, kind of a hugely positive weekend for him. Is this a good sign for what's to come for the rest of the season? I mean, obviously, the psychological impact of having a happy driver in a car is huge.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. A happy Lewis is a happy team. And we haven't seen much of that from him, have we? Only in his second season with Ferrari now. He absolutely hated the last sets of regulations. That ground effect car, he just could not get on with at all. They had the porpoising when he was at Mercedes. He just absolutely hated it. Definitely prefers these cars, even though a lot of the drivers have obviously complained. We've had those tweaks, which means it's a slightly moving back to a more natural style of driving now. But yeah, I think, you could sort of see from his body language at the weekend and even how he was talking. Okay, he moaned on the radio. I mean, he wouldn't be Lewis Hamilton unless he moaned on the radio. They all do it. We've had Max Verstappen as well, also finished on the podium. They love a moan. It's what they do. It's fine. But, you know, Lewis Hamilton's been talking a lot about his mum and how his mum, he's finally managed to convince her to go on a world tour with him. And he seems to be loving that. You saw at the end when he got that second place, he went over to all of his mechanics and his engineers and it was big hugs. And he was just absolutely in a really good place. And we also, he got that second place by having that battle with Max Verstappen in the end, which kind of saved the end of the race because we had those first 30 laps between the two Mercedes drivers. And then obviously, unfortunately, Russell's power unit failed and we were sort of robbed of this great second half of a race. But thankfully, Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen got the memo and started racing each other and it was brilliant. And then Lewis Hamilton came out on top and to finish second. And so I think the whole thing came together, coupled with the fact that he adores the circuit to Gilles Villeneuve. He's always gone very well there. And Hamilton has a bit of tends to be a bit track specific sometimes. You know, we saw him pull out that win in Silverstone a couple of years ago from absolutely nothing, his final win with Mercedes. So you have to couch it slightly with that. It might be slightly track specific, but certainly he seems to be settling into that team now. He feels more comfortable. It was really nice seeing him with his team at the end of the race and how he was celebrating. I think we may get to see a few more happy Lewis Hamilton races.
We talk about Hamilton and Ferrari, but usually when we're chatting about Ferrari, we're talking about Charles. What has happened to Charles this season? I feel like the last two races now, he's had a bit of a wild spin. He seems to be not as controlled of the car as we usually see. What's going on in Charles Leclerc's mind?
Oh, I mean, I've absolutely no idea. I can't tell you that. But I mean, Miami was a slightly tricky conditions and was a great catch from him when he did have that spin. Absolutely brilliant. Max Verstappen had one earlier in the race as well. So obviously that was the conditions weren't great. I mean, this is the first time that Lewis Hamilton has beaten his teammate. So I don't think we should be writing off Leclerc at the moment. I think he's still very much up there. He is unbelievably quick over one lap, you know, up there in the top three of quickest over one lap. We know the stats don't particularly go in his favour. It doesn't really translate to wins for him on the Sunday. But I think that probably has a bit more to do with how fast he is on the Saturday. And he doesn't really, Ferrari haven't given him a great race car. You know, I just don't, I think you have a couple of off weekends. As we've said, it's a long old season. He will be back. We know he will be back. But yeah, I wouldn't write him off just yet.
One theme that I feel like I need to apologise to in my predictions at the beginning of the season, who I did completely write off, was Alpine.
Yeah.
And every race weekend, I'm seeing them consistently in the points. I'm seeing, you know, the level-headedness of Gasly, who's years and years into his career now. You're seeing Colapinto being such an exciting young driver. I mean, kind of, how have they managed to be so much more consistent than the rest of the competitors and have solidified themselves firmly as the best of the rest, the top of the midfield?
Yeah, I mean, they've obviously got that Mercedes engine in the back, which we know is the most powerful, which is very helpful. They've obviously got their interpretation of the aero regs right as well. I think with Colapinto, it's his first full season as an F1 driver now. And it's funny, isn't it? Because it's such a fickle old world, Formula One. At the start of the year, people were writing off Colapinto and asking at which race was he going to get dropped. But then he was seventh in Miami. He was sixth in Montreal. And actually, we're seeing the glimmer of this Argentinian driver that we were all promised when he was at Williams, and then Alpine were fighting hard to get him, and then he replaced Jack Doohan, after about five races last year. And he didn't have a great season last year, but Flavio Briatore came out and said, don't worry about it. Look, we know how great he is. He just needs a bit of time. Bit of a rocky start to the year. But then actually now we're seeing what he's really like as a driver. And I think sometimes in Formula One, I mean, often in Formula One, if we're being honest, drivers aren't given that time. We've seen it plenty of times within the Red Bull stable, for example, probably the most ruthless stable to get rid of drivers. It's good that Alpine have given a bit of time. Obviously, they didn't give Jack Doohan any time, but they're sticking with Colapinto. And we saw, you know, you mentioned the five-week break. They went and did a demo run down in Buenos Aires, and they had 500,000 people come out to see Colapinto just doing a demo run in one of their cars. I mean, that is enormous. It's leading to chatter about the fact that the Argentinian Grand Prix could come back. You know, we know that there have been visits over to Argentina to see whether or not it's a viable option or not. You know, he brings with him a lot of money, a huge amount of money, a huge following, but now he's starting to perform on track. So actually, it's very exciting for Alpine. I mean, it's probably not great if you're Gasly at the moment because he was without doubt the number one driver within that team, but he's been outperformed for the last 2 weeks. And it's a great battle unfolding within Alpine. We talk about Mercedes, obviously, but the similar thing is happening with Alpine as well. Unfortunately, not fighting for a championship, but you cannot underestimate how important it is to finish what might be fifth for Alpine. The amount of prize money involved for them is huge. And obviously, they might be up for sale. Lots of chatter about what's going to happen with the ownership of Alpine. The better you are, the more you cost.
This is it. And again, I'm getting a bit carried away with hypotheticals today. But when I was watching Colapinto over the weekend, I was thinking, this is a real star. I can really see him getting snapped up by another team, but I wonder who.
It's for me, what I'm interested in this season and looking ahead to sort of next season is when the regulations have settled. Will, you know, will the movements happen? Will they begin then? As you alluded to there, the ownership of Alpine, you know, you have Briatore in there, there's Horner rumours, there's all this stuff happening. And I think Colapinto comes maybe a little less baggage than the likes of Gasly, who came through the Red Bull system. I was at the Barcelona Grand Prix last year, and it seemed like there was as many Argentinians there as Spaniards. This is a really interesting team dynamic that surely will kind of... It's going to be an interesting one to watch as the regulations settle and we see the driver market kind of expand, surely.
Yeah, I think so. You know, silly season kicks in earlier and earlier every year as they talk. That's what they call the driver madness around the driver market. It's interesting as well with the 27 regulations, because obviously we've had Max Verstappen being very vocal about the fact that he doesn't like these new regulations. They're looking into what they can change for next season. We've already had one tweak. They're looking at doing more changes for 2027, how big they will be. I mean, let's be honest, they can't really do that much given that it's a 50-50 split in the engine between the electric component and the combustion. We obviously have had all of these manufacturers come in pretty much based on these regulations. So you can't then go around and say, actually, we know you spent millions and millions of pounds developing these engines. They'll last a season and we'll change it. That won't happen. But it's interesting with Alpine because there is a lot of chatter going on in the background about ownership. You know, you mentioned Christian Horner. He's obviously been spotted with the chairperson of BYD, the China electric company, who are looking to come into Formula One or reportedly looking to come in. Could they become the 12th team? Do they just buy the stake from Alpine? We know that Alpine are looking to sell a stake. So it is interesting because they always say, the teams love to say, oh, yeah, don't worry. There's all this noise, but it's not affecting us. It doesn't filter down to the shop floor. It absolutely does filter down to the shop floor. I can tell you that from speaking to some of the team members. It's not necessarily negative, but you can be sure that they want to know who's going to be paying their wages. So, you know, that's very normal. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Alpine. Hopefully they just let the race team get on with it and the drivers carry on racing. Gasly, we know, can sometimes, he can be a bit tricky, let's say. So hopefully he doesn't fall out with the team or anything like that. Be interesting to see, like you say, about the dynamics, how they work together, because they're not fighting for the championship. So actually, these two drivers do need to be working together to drag that team forward to make sure that they are fighting near the front. I mean, they could absolutely, definitely be in the hunt for podiums this year. There's no reason why not. You know, you just need a bit of rain, a bit of luck if you're in the right place, like we've talked about with Antonelli, to take advantage of that. So there's a lot for Alpine to play for at the moment.
It was interesting. So I want to kind of move back to Mercedes very slightly because of something that you just said there about them kind of being on the same team. They're not fighting for wins, so they're going to work together. During, I think when there's a sprint race, we sometimes forget to talk about it because we're so focused on the main race. But during the sprint race, when Antonelli and Russell had their little spat, shall we call it, Antonelli had said on the radio, he needs to get a penalty about his own teammate. Surely that would be something that Mercedes needs to nip in the bud very quickly, because the Constructors' Championship is where the money is. You can't be calling for your teammate to be getting a penalty when it will negatively impact that.
I feel like that was such a 19-year-old boy move there. He forgot what he was actually doing and it was just pure rage.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, we've heard the drivers say it. They are in the heat of the moment. The adrenaline is flowing. You know, I think, was it George Russell who said after Montreal, if you put microphones on the football players on the pitch, you'd hear some pretty bad language as well, and they'd be saying bad things about their own teammates. You know, it does happen. I think it can be forgiven when it's in the heat of the moment like that. I honestly don't think that will be an issue within the team. I think it's more about what they say publicly afterwards, that will be very carefully managed and curated. And I think with Antonelli and that incident, and you're right, we often forget about the sprint race, which was fantastic between those two. But I also think with Mercedes, and again, going back to 2016, I think they're just so dominant. They don't really need to worry too much, which is a risky thing to say at this stage. And obviously we know McLaren are incredibly good at bringing upgrades. And this, as ever, will be the development race will be a huge part of the season. But I think Mercedes are so far out in front at the moment, as long as they're not taking each other out on track and they continue finishing 1-2 as they have been doing, or obviously not in Montreal with Russell not finishing. But I think if they can at least be getting both drivers on the podium and scoring big points, I don't think they need to worry too much. But I'm sure a word was had with Antonelli.
And speaking of potential dangers, it might not be their own teammate, but Red Bull finally showed us something this weekend, which was really exciting. Max Verstappen finally on the podium. Great battle between himself and Lewis, like old times. And also Hadjar as well, his strongest performance to date. I mean, almost took out himself and Leclerc at one point, but he did come out at fifth. What's changed? Do you think they've just finally settled in to these new regulations and the car?
Well, we had that tweak that I mentioned. So you don't have to lift as much to harvest the battery. And so it lets the drivers do a bit more foot to floor, as it were. So it's a more natural driving style for someone like Verstappen, who obviously is absolutely the driver of his generation. I think with Red Bull, never write them out. I mean, you do really, we've mentioned it before, but you only have to look back to last season.
Yeah.
He only lost out on that championship by 2 points, which is utterly, utterly incredible and tells you everything you need to know about what a phenomenal driver he is. Because at the start of the year, he was driving an absolute tractor around. And, you know, we had a lot of, and, you know, we've mentioned it already with the noise and the mess of what was going on. And obviously Christian Horner left in the July, I think it was in the end, just after the British Grand Prix. And they had Laura Mekies then come in and the team settled. And then they had a great second half of the season. So it was weird. You mentioned it, like, I had to double check. Is this really Verstappen's first podium of the year? Because it doesn't actually feel like they'd been that far off the pace, but he'd been finishing in the sixes, the sevens. Yeah. And you're like, oh, that's really bizarre. That's really odd. But it is his first podium. And it does feel like they've taken a step forward. He certainly likes the tweaks that have been made. And as I mentioned already, he's, you know, still says that they're not going far enough for 27. I don't think he'll ever be happy with what they do for 27. But yeah, I would never write him off. I mean, he could drive a terrible car around and he's one of those incredibly special drivers who can get something out of a car that isn't really even there. So if they can even give him a sniff of a championship winning car, he will absolutely take it with both hands.
I feel like Verstappen is someone who is so good for the sport in the way that you can never say he's not in the championship fight.
Yeah.
I mean, we're looking right now with Antonelli 40 plus points ahead. And I think the two McLarens are ahead of Verstappen still in the championship fight. But at the same time, I would nearly have Verstappen as more likely to get a string of results in and put pressure on the Mercedes than almost either of the McLarens. That's the kind of the generational talent that he's proven to be over this last few years.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, in the championship, you've got the two Mercedes drivers followed by the two Ferrari drivers, followed by both McLaren drivers. And then Max Verstappen's down in seventh at the moment. And actually, only a fool would write him off, because he is just different level. When his season kicks in, it kicks in a big way, and he can score those big points when it's needed. And I think you write him off at your peril.
I always see him as like a shark when you see him come up and I'm watching the times and it's literally almost like I can imagine for the driver in front, like a horror film, the way it's just like creeping up. But you say he's the best driver in his generation. And it was fascinating seeing him alongside Lewis and Kimi Antonelli. And I was wondering, these three drivers right now have set history. Even Kimi, you know, he's already breaking records. Do you think we're going to see Kimi Antonelli, I know it's so early to say, but up there with the likes of Lewis and Max as one of the greats, do you think? Just from what we've seen, I know he's in a great car and I know it's so early, but just seeing that picture of the three of them, and Lewis adores Kimi too. Are we going to see that kind of greatness from Kimi, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, because that podium was fascinating and it led to a lot of talk about how Lewis was obviously the driver of his generation. He passed on the baton to Max Verstappen. Are we now seeing Max Verstappen passing on the baton to Kimi Antonelli? And we don't know is the answer. Certainly, Mercedes believe that Antonelli is this great talent. He was shielded from the media for many, many years. I mean, we were only really allowed to talk to him a couple of years ago, just the season before he was confirmed. Even when he did his FP1 outing, was it in Monza, where he crashed actually on his first outing. And then they still confirmed him as their driver that year. And even then we weren't allowed to talk to him. And, and they've kind of wrapped him up in bubble wrap, told us behind the scenes about how great he is as a driver. Obviously, a bit of a ropey rookie season, but now we're sort of seeing the glimmer of what has been promised to us. So there's no reason why not, as far as Mercedes are concerned, but I think we will have to wait and see.
It kind of reminds me a little bit of the landscape in tennis, where for so long you had Federer, yeah. Nadal, Djokovic, to an extent Murray. And then you had this kind of lost generation, your Medvedevs, your teams, your Tsitsipases. And they remind me so much of George Russell, of Alex Albon, of Lando Norris, that class of 2019. Mm-hmm. Norris has his world championship. You can see Russell straining, really trying, thinking this is maybe the best chance he's going to have maybe this year.
Yeah.
When Mercedes are so dominant. Is that weighing on his mind a little bit? Kind of, are you in that unfortunate place of the middle of two kind of generations, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right in the sense of Lando Norris, I don't personally think is a generational talent, but you do have these seasons where, you only have to look back to 2009, Jenson Button. He had the most incredible car underneath him. Was he good enough to be world champion that year? Well, it doesn't really matter because he was. And so every now and again, you have these drivers who come through and they take a title here, there, Kimi Raikkonen, you could perhaps argue as well, is in that boat. Obviously great drivers and in the right place to take advantage. I mean, Lando Norris should have easily won the championship last year, given the dominance of his car, but he didn't. As I mentioned, he only won it by 2 points and it went down to the wire. George Russell may think that this might be his only opportunity to win a world championship. I mean, we spent the entire year last year knowing that these huge regulations were coming in for this season, saying McLaren may only have one shot. It might be Piastri, as it looked early on in the season. Then it flipped to Norris, as we had all expected, a similar theme to this year. And actually, you do only get one shot of it. And even with Mercedes and all of their years of dominance, every year I would speak to Lewis Hamilton and he would say, this might be it. We might create a dud car next year. I've got no idea. Even with the regulations mostly staying the same, these drivers have that mentality that this might be it. And so you have to eke out every last bit of what you are capable of, because you've got no idea if this is your one shot. And okay, maybe Mercedes do produce a great car next year as well, but Antonelli is there, isn't he, in the garage saying, well, even if you do win it this year, I'm going to have it next year. So you don't know, and you do have to take advantage when it's presented to you.
And I feel like that's what makes it so unfortunate that we're half an hour into this podcast now and it's the first time we've mentioned Oscar Piastri's name.
Yeah.
Which seems crazy to think of after last year, especially the beginning of last year when he was so successful, and then heading into the summer, it seemed like his championship was an inevitability, which then didn't happen. He obviously had that incredibly unfortunate incident, a bit of a lockup into that turn, hit into the side of poor Alex Albon, as you said earlier, if he'd have any luck, no luck, any luck at all. This seems like, for Piastri, the summer swing and the European season, he needs to start building some momentum, because he's getting completely forgotten in any sort of conversations about what's happening at the top of the grid.
And his own team,
he's not in the mix at all.
Yeah.
Starting on the Inters, and he said on the radio, what was that thinking?
Piastri is such an interesting one, because I remember, what was the third race, Japan, and he said, I've just been watching the races like you guys on TV. I mean, he didn't even start the first two races. It was quite incredible. And then he had that really weird lunge on Albon, like you mentioned. That gap was not there. That was a very bizarre mistake from him. The mistake of a person who seems very frustrated, I would say. And you're right, that call on the radio to start on the Inters was very bizarre anyway, really bizarre. I mean, Max Verstappen said it best in the cool down room, didn't he? We heard him saying, "Oh, McLaren really messed up." I was like, yeah, we know, but thanks for clarifying our feelings. So it was a really odd one. And then Piastri, I thought, was making a very good point, saying, look, everyone's on cold tyres. It was incredibly cold in Montreal over the weekend. everyone's on cold tires. So just bring me in and put on some nice warm boots for me, straight out of their tire blankets, and I have an advantage. Why they didn't split their strategy is beyond me. They've almost become, like, you could argue they're too obsessed with treating the drivers identically. That was a mistake.
Yeah.
They should have split their strategies, particularly when you have Piastri. Two formation laps. So they had two opportunities because Piastri was on the radio for both of those laps saying, bring me in. Both times they didn't. And we saw the result. And Norris was obviously on the inters as well, shot into the lead, was leading into turn one. But it's irrelevant because he had to pit a few laps later to put on the dry tyres. So McLaren really, really messed up their strategy. And like you say, poor Piastri, he's just not even part of the conversation at the moment, is he? But, well, he's part of one conversation, which is he being teed up to go to Red Bull?
I'd love to see that.
That's crazy. That was such a crazy way to, like, drop it in as well. What is the likelihood?
I mean, these rumours are really gaining traction. So we have all this chatter from Max Verstappen saying he's threatening to leave the sport. Absolutely no one's really buying it, let's be honest. But Red Bull, if they are being sensible, and they are a very good team, will be looking for his successor, because at some point he will step away. And I do. There is a part of me that thinks that at the end of his contract, he's still got a couple of years to run, that he might walk away. He isn't bothered. I certainly believe him when he says he's not bothered by getting to 7 or 8 world championships. I mean, also, it's not really an option. You have to have the car, which he doesn't. But Red Bull will be looking for a successor. We know that a team cannot continue for years and years and years with two drivers both trying to win the world championship. It's not realistic. McLaren did a fantastic job last year of keeping the harmony between the two drivers, or perceived harmony between the two drivers. They didn't let it eke out if there was any tension. They managed it very well. But there's no way that Piastri wants to stay in that team when it's pretty clear that Lando Norris is the number one driver. So why not move to Red Bull? Why not go and learn from Max Verstappen and just wait a couple of years until Verstappen leaves and then you become the number one driver in that team? It's actually pretty sensible.
So thinking about McLaren and the future, let's not go too far ahead. Let's have a look at Monaco. What will they be thinking about in 2 weeks' time? Are they going to be thinking about strategy, keeping the drivers happy? What do you think? Are we going to get any upgrades, do we think? Where are, you know, McLaren at, do you think, for Monaco?
So Monaco is a funny one. So definitely during the European season, we will see a lot of upgrades because most of the teams are based within, well, UK, but obviously Ferrari in Italy. And Audi have a base in Switzerland as well. So they bring a lot of the upgrades just because logistically it's easier. Monaco is a tricky one because the car is very Monaco specific. So you don't tend to bring big upgrades because the specifications of the car are very much set to a track which doesn't allow for overtaking, is all about qualifying on Saturday. And so I don't think we're going to see too much, but you're absolutely right in the sense it will come down to strategy. Whoever is the quicker driver gets the preferential strategy. There will be a lot of conversation about that. But to be honest, it's all about even with these new regulations, it is still very much about what happens on the Saturday. Because yes, we've seen this great, you know, we mentioned it at the top, the yo-yo racing, Montreal was great for that. But these cars are enormous, absolutely enormous. And the track is not. And there's no runoff. You know, they are racing millimeters away from the barriers. There just isn't really room to overtake, which is a bit of a shame. I mean, you have a couple of places, but not really. So it will still be all about Saturday. So the focus for all of the teams, not just McLaren, will be on qualifying.
So are you yourself a Monaco?
I know. I heard
loyalist?
This. I was listening to Inside the Verona Club, and I know you said this is your least favorite track. Is that because it's just so little room?
No, not even the track. I just dislike Monaco as a weekend. The paddock is horrendous. Logistically, the paddock is nowhere near the garages. So trying to get up there, it's really small. It's really difficult to get around. I just don't really enjoy it as a weekend as a whole. But it's not great on a Sunday. Let's be completely honest. There's a lot of fun to be had. It's very wonderful getting to drink champagne on a yacht. You know, I won't say otherwise. I won't pretend it's not. I stay in a gorgeous little town down the coast, which I adore. And I love escaping to at the end of a day. And, you know, we go and eat dinner in the same places and it's lovely. But yeah, Monaco is certainly, I know it's on a lot of people's bucket lists and I wouldn't deter you from going if that's what you want to do. But I would happily never go back.
I was there myself on the weekend of a, not this year, but a Formula E race, which I didn't get to actually see the race myself. But you're in the city when the grandstands are all off and when you have the markings and everything, kind of you can walk the racetrack and it feels like it's set up for the race. And it sort of made me one of these Monaco cultists where I was like, you can never leave the calendar.
Yeah.
This is special. I'm one of those annoying people now who never want to see it leave.
No, but I don't think it should leave the calendar. I mean, I do agree with you. It's more, honestly, it's mostly just logistics and it's really hard to get around. I mean, they do amazing ham baguettes in the media center. I will say that. That is a highlight. but yeah, it's just, as a weekend, I find it just a difficult one to navigate.
And it's 2 weeks' time, and that's coming up. And we have a bit of an Irish interest in that as well, because we have, is the F2 racing there as well?
Yeah.
So we have F2 with Alex Dunn, and we have Formula 3 with Finn McLaughlin, and the young Irish driver there. And it's the F3's first race since Melbourne. So from our perspective, it's going to be
really exciting.
An exciting and probably a busier Monaco weekend than we're used watching, where you kind of tune in really hard on the Saturday and then maybe doze a bit on the Sunday, but hopefully that won't be the case this year. So
Alex Dunn is an interesting one. Still lots of chatter about him moving up to F1. So still a lot of noise around him, where he could potentially go. He was obviously linked to Alpine. He's been linked to McLaren, obviously left McLaren. But definitely keep your eyes on Alex Dunn. His F1 future is still up for grabs.
Yeah, we were at Mondello Park in Ireland, in Kildare, a few weeks ago. There was a historic festival on and we were chatting to Alex there. And it's the kind of maturity, the level-headedness that he says that he still needs to kind of develop over the course of this season. He's a very mature young man and we have our own kind of Irish motorsports infrastructure. Everyone is still very excited about him. Derek Daly, still the most successful Irish Formula One driver. We were chatting to him as well. And he seems ridiculously confident that in the next 2 years we're going to see Don in an F1 car.
And what did he say about Monaco? Patience
and
discipline. So
he's right.
I think that will definitely be needed, especially for the Mercedes if they're going to battle each other in Monaco. We know it's actually quite interesting. I think it was Crofty that said that, you know, George has got the control, but Antonelli has the pace over Russell. So I don't know if you agree with that, but I think that will be one to watch.
Yeah, don't know if I fully agree with it. I think George Russell is incredibly quick. You know, he was F3 and F2 champion. I think he's an incredibly good driver. I still actually think Russell will win the championship.
Really?
But I think he is going to get taken to the wire.
Yeah, well, I'm really looking forward to the first Monaco of these new regulations. Rebecca, thank you very much for joining us as always this week. And as always as well, the F1 Pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by KitKat, bringing breaks to the fastest sport in the world. Hashtag have a break. Thank you very much.
The Formula One Pod on Off the Ball, brought to you by KitKat. Hit pause, have a break,
have a KitKat.